Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show tonight. And when I do an open show, I normally have a great co-host. And tonight I have a great co-host, Michael P. McCarthy.
Happy
Mickey.
To be here.
Mickey is the Chief Operating Officer and the Chief Compliance Officer of the Financial Consulate. And he's a CPA and CFP. And
personal financial specialist.
You got to get up here to the mic.
Got to get up closer.
Got to get up right next to that mic and speak
right
in there.
Right here.
There you go. Now you talk like that and everyone will hear you. And but Mikey hangs out at the office more, but he's starting to come to the radio show more because you heard him just back in August when I was in Montana fishing with the grandchildren. He was there, and if you watch our videos, our Pulse videos at each month, Mike is one of he's typically the person on the Pulse video each month, and probably one of our most talented advisors in our company. So, Mikey, good to have you.
Oh, good to be here. I appreciate that, too. Now, when you went to Montana, that got messed up because I was offering to go fishing in Montana while you did the radio show.
But it didn't work.
No, it did not work.
I trumped that and made an executive decision that, no, I'm going fishing. You're staying here and do the radio show.
Now somebody's got to work.
So anyway, we're on an open show tonight. You want to call in 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask a question. And it can be anything. You know, tonight is your night. That's why we do the open show. Next week, we're actually doing elder care law with Candace Scher from Frank and Scher. And that's a great topic. If you have somebody that needs medical care assistance and the bills are going to start piling up and you wonder, is there a way to get the government to help you pay for it? That's what elder care is all about, getting the Medicaid approval on something. That's going to be next week, but this week is any topic. If it has to deal with your personal finances, we're here to help you. 410-922-6680 is your way to call in and direct the conversation on an open show. You can say, you know, okay, it's an open show. I want to talk about my 401k, or hey, I got a tax issue I want to talk about, or hey, somebody's telling me how to do this with insurance. Do you agree with this? And so forth. Whatever the topic is, if it deals with your personal finances, you can call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. And, you know, just to give you some ideas, you know, this morning, Mike, I talked to Sean and Frank about charitable giving. It's a whole new world now with this new tax law.
It is. They've completely changed it, and that way everyone needs to look at it is completely different. And now is a great time of year to start thinking about not only this year, but also next year.
Yeah, so what you're looking to do now under the new tax law is you're looking to do what's called qualified charitable distribution. Now, the good news is you can do this, but the bad news is you can only do it if you're 70 and a half years or older. And if you are 70 and a half and you do have IRA money, you cannot do this from a 403B or a 401K. You can only do it from an IRA. So make sure you roll your money into an IRA. But if you're doing any charitable giving, $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, whatever, and you're getting money out of an IRA, mandatory distributions, you need to be doing qualified charitable distributions. And you know, Mike, one of the problems is a lot of brokerage firms and agents and so forth, they're not interested in doing this. A lot of administration.
Well, yeah. I mean, also a lot of times their compliance department, I know as the compliance department for us, you know, it's a lot different, but their compliance departments may regulate what they can talk on that topic. But you know what? Even with that, one of the things that amazes me about qualified charitable distributions is we've been beating the war drum about this for over a year. And, you know, to go at what we've heard clients say is we talk about this, we talk about how important it is, and you still have a client who comes up and says, hey, well, it's okay. I'm just going to deduct it from my itemized deductions.
Right. And they're missing the whole point.
They're missing it.
Because you may not get the full benefit of it. And when you do a qualified charitable distribution, you minimize your adjusted gross income. Now, to accountants like you and me, that's cool. But we got a caller online. We're going to go to them first, Mike. We'll come back to a topic on this. Maybe in the same realm, Steve in Ellicott City, what can we do for you?
Hey, Drew. I did hear you on Sean and Frank this morning.
Okay.
And you had mentioned a couple of specific things regarding charitable giving that we need to look into with the new tax law.
Okay.
I did not get a chance to write that stuff down.
So let me ask you this question, Steve. First off, how old approximately are you?
I am 56.
Okay, that's really approximate, 56. How much money approximately do you, are you married?
I am.
How much approximate amount of money would you give to charity every year? $1,000, $50,000, $5,000?
It runs right around 20 grand.
20 grand. So here's the deal, Steve. Under this new tax law, depending on what, do you have a big mortgage on your house?
No, trying to pay it down.
Okay. So your only deductions you're going to get on your itemized deductions are $10,000 for state and local taxes and property taxes, right? You're going to get very little, if any, mortgage deduction because, like you said, you pretty much paid it off. And then it's your charitable deductions. Now, you don't get any benefit from your charitable deductions until your total itemized deductions are over $24,000. Well, if you're only getting 10 for state and local taxes, that means 14,000 of your charitable contributions are basically of no benefit to you until you get to that last six. When you get to that last six, you get a deduction still now. So how do you do it? What you do is you bunch. You take 4, 5, 6 years worth of your charitable giving. You go to appreciated securities. If you've got appreciated securities, you bunch it all together. You put it in a donor advice fund, especially with appreciated securities. And for the next 5 or 6 years, while this tax law is in force, you use your donor advice fund to do your charitable giving, and you reaccumulate the money you put into the donor advice fund with the charitable monies you would have used from your paychecks to give away every year. Go ahead, Mikey.
Drew, what I was just going to say is that's even more important for Steve because we're here in Maryland, right? Why don't you explain that aspect of it?
When you say that.
Well, if you're on that line between.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I see what you're saying. So you know, you got to be really careful. In Maryland, you're not allowed to take the itemized deductions unless you you itemize on your federal deduction, you know. And so with this strategy, you can benefit yourself by pulling this off. And what you're going to do is you're going to get a massive tax deduction in 1 year. You're going to what we typically do is a Roth conversion. This is a whole, you know. This really gets cool when you sit down and look at the numbers. It's a really cool thing. I don't know if I've given you too much, Steve, to go on, but your situation at your age, you need to learn about donor advice fund, and you need to learn how to bunch a lot of this charitable giving into 1 year and look at the concept of how Roth conversion then works with it in conjunction together, and it really is a cool strategy.
Okay.
Did I just blow you away there?
A little bit, but I think you said this morning there was some information about it on your website.
Well, I have an article out there called The New World of Charitable Giving on our website. It's under the Consulate Journal. So there's an article out there on it, but you really need to learn about this. And so the journal article would be a great start for that, all right?
Okay, great.
All right, buddy, you take care. I got to go to traffic right now. I'm going to be back open show tonight, 410-922-6680. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your financial physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I know that, so we might as well just move on. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. We're on an open show. Your turn to direct the conversation. You get to be the guest. You get to say, you know, I understand you like to have a guest on talking about a specific topic, but this is what's interesting to me. This is what can change my life, like Steve calling in earlier and saying, you know, I do a lot of charitable contributions. I heard you talking about this. This can change my life if you help me understand this. And so now's your time to call in, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And right now I'm going to Ray in Westminster. Ray, how can we help you?
Hey, I got a question on income from a property. My wife and I ended up short selling a house in Baltimore.
Okay.
And we're getting conflicting reports on to whether or not the difference in what we owed versus what it sold for, we have to pay taxes on.
So that's an interesting question. It's a complicated question. Assuming it's not your personal residence, right?
Correct.
Okay, so I'm assuming
it used to be, then we rented it.
So it was a rental property, okay?
Yes.
So is your net worth positive?
If you take into account 401ks and retirement, yes.
Okay, so you have a positive net worth, all right? And when they forgave the loan to you, was there any talk about them issuing a 1099? What's the 1099?
I'm just trying to look it up right now.
Forgiveness
I can't think
of debt. Did they ever say anything about that?
Yes, they did.
Okay, well, then if they're going to issue a 1099 forgiveness of debt, it would be taxable income to you. But then if you have enough, you know, tax losses and so forth from the sale of the property, it might eat that forgiveness of debt up. You might have a substantial amount of passive loss carrybacks that you have. You know, you might have, if you short sailed the house, I'm going to assume that you probably ended up losing money on it. What's the 1099,
Mike? 1099C, because I knew it was really going to hold you up unless you knew that.
Yeah, wasn't one you see all that often. But yes, Ray, I would expect that if they forgave the debt on you, then, and you have a positive net worth, and I would expect that they're going to issue a 1099C and it will be taxable to you.
Okay.
All right, man.
All right, thank you very much.
But, you know, if he takes a tax loss on that real estate, even if it's $20,000, $50,000, $100,000, he's going to get that deduction. I mean, I got a client just right now, and out in California, sold the house, rental property, $150,000 of tax losses he's going to get from the sale of that property. It's not the greatest thing. He still lost $150,000,
sure.
But he's at least going to recover $50,000 or $60,000 of it in tax savings.
Well, and that's an important point, is that when we're talking about tax questions, it's just difficult to always know everything. So when anytime somebody has a tax year that has something out, you know, outside of the norm, that's definitely a tax year to go to a CPA, get that extra help, because you never know what other opportunities there are to either offset income or offset deductions.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I hope that Ray, you know, has somebody professionally preparing. That's the person he should go to and say, okay, if they give me this forgiveness of debt and I have the sale of this house, am I going to report a loss from the sale of the house? You know, the worst case scenario is he ends up recouping all his depreciation. In other words, he has to recapture
the
depreciation, and he has a profit on the house somehow or another, and he has to pay for the forgiveness of debt. Now, that would be an interesting scenario. But I got to go to another caller. But before I do, 410-922-6680, if you want a direct conversation tonight. Jack in Lisbon Is that Lisbon, Portugal?
No, not that far away.
Okay, cool. What can we do for you, Jack?
My sister lost her husband last year, and she's going to sell the house that they've owned. And I was just wondering, you know, whether, you know, she probably has about jointly they've had it for many years, and they're going to make about $500,000 on the house.
So here's how that works, Jack, okay? So let's say they bought the house, and let's just use these numbers. Let's say they bought the house for $50,000, okay, and put another $10,000 into it. So they have a total cost basis in the house for $60,000, but the house is now worth $600,000. You know, it's done really well for them. But the, you know, unfortunately, the husband passed away last year, 2018, let's say. And in 2018, the house was still worth about $600,000, and they owned the house jointly. So here's the way it's going to work. Her jointly owned house cost basis after the husband passed away would be $330,000 the year that he passes away. Why? Well, she gets a step up in 50% of the house to the fair market value for the husband's share of the house that she inherits. That's $300,000, 50% of $600,000, the value of the house the year he died. She gets 50% of the original basis, her original basis, 50%, that's $30,000. So now she's got a total basis of $330,000. Now, if she sells the house, I believe in this year or next year, she still gets 3 out of 5. She can use the full joint. She can use it's either 3 out of 5 or it's a couple years after the death of a spouse that she has the right to take the full $500,000 capital gains exclusion. But I think it's only this year, Mike. I think she goes back to single, which is only $250,000. But it doesn't matter. $250,000 with $330,000, she could cover up the entire loss of the house and bring the taxable situation down to
two years.
The year of death and the year after. Is that what it's saying? Or 24 months. I don't know. We'll have to look at that. But you see what I'm saying, Jack? If that's the situation, my guess is that she's not going to pay taxes on it if the gain is only in about the $500,000 category. All right?
Okay. Thank you.
All right, buddy. That's a good question. I mean, you know, and without knowing the specifics, but, you know, when you get that step up in basis, plus you get at least $250,000, as Mike's saying, she's in the first year or two after the death, she'll get $500,000 exclusion.
Yeah, and what I'm reading here is it's 2 years from the date of death.
2 years from the date of death. If she sells the house, she gets the full $500,000 capital gain exclusion. We're on an open show tonight, and Brian, you're going to have to hold on with us because Chris, our producer, keeps looking at me with an evil eye because I've been going over for the traffic breaks the last couple times, so I can't do that again. So hopefully you'll hold on, and hopefully other callers, I have lines open, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask any question on personal finances, and we've had some on charity, we've had some on taxes and so forth, if you want to call in and say, this is the direction I want to go in, can you help me? Boom, we'll be there to help you after we come back from this pause with traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right. Do you know who this is, Chris? Yeah, I don't know who this is. I don't believe you. It's the Doors. Yep. Anyway, thank you for telling me that. Anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680, but I don't want to hold Brian any longer. Brian in Joppatown, how can we help you?
Yes. My wife and I have accumulated kind of suddenly about $450,000. And just stuck it in low-interest bank accounts.
Okay.
About 7%. And I need to move it, of course. And one thing I was thinking of is, well, we're in a 10% tax bracket, and I was thinking of moving part of it to a dividend ETF or two, and which I understand would the dividends would only be taxed at 20%. And another possibility was with a dividend mutual fund, but I can't find any definite information about how that would be taxed.
Well, a dividend mutual fund would be taxed the exact same way as any dividends that are derived either by a mutual fund or an ETF or an LLC or anything. If it's dividend, it's taxed as a dividend subject to the 0, 15, or 20%. And remember, it's not just 20%, it's 23.8%, because if your income's high enough to be in the 20% bracket, you also have to throw on 3.8% of Medicare, as they call it, the Medicare tax, the NIIT tax. So it's 23.8%, but still lower than 37, right? You know, so it's not a bad deal. But, you know, before you do that, the real question you have to ask yourself is, do you need to get a higher rate of return? And are you willing to accept the volatility that comes with that? So, and that all comes down to your goals and objectives and what you're trying to accomplish and what your long-term goals are for the money after you two pass away and all those good things. So, you know, before you go rushing off, make sure that you've thought out the strategy as to why am I doing this? Do I need to do this? Are my goals and objectives in line with this? Am I willing to accept the volatility? Because even though they're dividend-paying securities, they're still going to go up and down. Dividend securities went down 35% in 2008, another 10 or 15% in the first few months of 2009. So, you know, you get a lot of volatility even in dividend stocks. Mikey, did you have something there?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that also whenever you're considering a change in investments, you know, looking at the whole spectrum rather than focusing on, you know, a single idea, you know, thinking about municipal bonds, thinking about the options around them, but also even just thinking about, you know, higher interest products. I know we were Chuck and I were looking today that Emirates and a couple of the others have lowered their interest rates, but they're still at 2%.
Right. And so when you say Emirates, you mean My Savings Direct,
My Savings Direct or
Ally Bank or CIT. You know, all these online savings accounts are paying 2.2% FDIC insured. So what's the rate of return that you need to accomplish your goals and objectives, Brian? What are your before you go off and just make an investment because you want a higher rate of return than what the local brick and mortar banks are offering, make sure it lines up with your goals and objectives. That's all I'm trying to say.
Would a bond mutual fund be something I should consider too?
Well, maybe, but, you know, maybe municipal bond mutual fund. But keep in mind, if it's a bond mutual fund and it creates dividends in the mutual fund, the dividends are from interest of the bonds they own. Therefore, they will be taxed as interest, not as dividends. Even though they call it a dividend, it'll still be taxed as interest up to the 37%. The dividend will only be true if it's from a dividend equity security that is subject to that 20% bracket. All right, my friend?
Right. Okay. Yeah, you've been a lot of help. Thank you.
All right, buddy. You take care. I got to run to Bill in Bel Air. Bill, how can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call. I just retired and I got an IRA, and I was wondering if when I start drawing income from it, what's a good rule of thumb for the percent you take out to hopefully keep the principal, you know, for the next 20, 30 years?
So you're just turning 70 and a half this year or next year?
No, I'm just 63.
Oh, 63. Oh, so you're saying, so, you know, that's a difficult question. It depends on how you're investing the money, of course. But if you have a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds and say you're 50, 60, 70% equity, your typical withdrawal that's not going to impact the principal is between 3 and 5% is the customary thought process toward that. Now, every year you assess it. Well, did I do more than 3 to 5%? And you take yourself a bonus or something of that sort. But that's the typical way that people are going to do it if they don't want the principal to move too much over the years you're withdrawing it.
Oh, okay. And I had another question. When you take out the money, what would be a good percent of tax to take out when you do that, between federal and state?
Again, that depends on your other – what other things do you have? Do you have pensions? Do you have Social Security? How much is your Social Security? Do you have dividends and interest? Do you have any rental properties? And it depends on the income you have. If all you have is Social Security, and let's say your Social Security between you and your spouse is $40,000, and you're going to take another $30,000 or $40,000 from your IRA, then 10 to 15% federal, 5 to 7% state is going to be a very typical number. Let's say, though, your income is going to be well over $100,000 and 15 to 20% federal, 6 to 8% state is going to be a more reasonable number. So it really depends where you fall on that spectrum to answer that question. But hopefully that gives you a good guideline for where you're going to fall.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
All right, my friend. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. I'm here with Michael P. McCarthy, Chief Operating Officer, Chief Compliance Officer of the Consulate. And if you want to call and ask a question, 410-922-6680. I'm going to my friend Gene in Columbia. Gene, how can we help you?
He's the chief. Is he the guy with the handcuffs?
He's the guy with the handcuffs. If
I do follow him around, though.
If I do something wrong, he gets to handcuff me.
So we call him Indiana?
Yes, that's right.
All right. Before I ask my question, I heard today in the news that the Virginia taxpayer was getting $100 or $200 back because of the windfall in the tax year for the Virginia tax people as a rebate for the windfall they got because of the federal tax changes. Are we waiting for one here in Maryland? I don't think so.
You're a humorous, aren't you?
I know. I wouldn't call for more Christians in the Coliseum now. My question has to do, I attended probably the best financial seminar I've attended in the last 10 years, last night. Very succinct, didn't dwell on anything, wasn't selling anything, which was unusual. And the one thing he mentioned was using life insurance as a legacy tool to leave money to your heirs.
Okay.
I cannot foresee us ever using going through my assets for the rest of my life. So the question becomes, at age 70 and a half, and my wife just turned 69, in other words, how high a premium would you suggest we tolerate to do that?
Well, so, you know, the concept can work, okay? That's number one. The concept can work, but it really depends on what type of assets you have, how they're invested and so forth, where you're going to get your premium from to pay these taxes, to pay this premium and so forth. But here's the big key. The big key is that not all insurance policies are created equally. And so the concept might be wonderful, but, you know, you go to this agent and you might get a policy that's this with this much death benefit. You go to a totally different agent that's much more aligned with your best interest, and you might get a whole different policy for the same amount of money that's substantially better than what you're getting over here. So,
right. So
the concept can work. One of my concerns is make sure you're dealing with a fiduciary who's guiding you to get the best policy possible so that you don't end up putting out a lot of money for a lot less than what your children, you know, or your heirs, you would want. So that's the first thing that I would say. But how much, you know, really depends on how much assets you have. Like, I had a client the other day, they have a lot of assets in deferred assets, okay? And they have a handicapped child. So it's a strategy we'll typically use. Let's look at the concept of taking more money out of the IRAs, buy an insurance policy to help provide for that child for the rest of their life, if that child outlives them, which we would expect, and now it's going in tax-free to them. But you got to hold with me if you want to hear a little more on that, because sure. I got to go to traffic and we'll be back. But if anybody else wants to call in, 410-922-6680. Right now, we got to go to traffic. We'll be right back. This is Drew Tignanelli, president of the Financial Consulate and host of Money, Riches, and Wealth. So often a radio listener calls me saying, I've been listening to you for years and have been meaning to call. When they come in for their comprehensive financial physical, they say, I wish I had done this years ago. If you've been meaning to call and meet with us, then do not wait. Call now to learn more about our trademark financial physical. The financial physical is designed to be a comprehensive second opinion analyzing all your goals and objectives. Are you maximizing tax efficiencies? Will you be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? Is your portfolio properly allocated? Are just a few of the many parts of the physical. The best part of our service is you get to see the final product before you decide if you want to pay for it. We do this to assure you we are not selling product, and we guarantee the physical to be truly beneficial. Do not wait any longer. Call 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBL.
All right, we're back. What's it, the Doors night, you know? Anyway, we're here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show. We're going back to Gene real quick, and then we're going to just address that. Go ahead, Mikey. You had something you were saying during the break.
Yeah, Gene. So something that I was thinking about for you is, you know, life insurance, like Drew said, may be one of the ways that you look at transferring wealth to the next generation, but a really underutilized, underexamined way to maximize what you leave behind to the next generation is the Roth conversion. Now, yep. I think Drew will point out that there's a potential problem in the future with it, but at least under the current laws, doing a Roth conversion now, or at least doing the analysis, looking at your children's tax brackets, your tax bracket, and how long they might actually hold that money still in Roth after you're gone, I mean, the savings and the maximization can be incredible.
Yeah, and if you're going to spend money, you know, that would be one way to spend it, is spend it on paying some taxes, get the Roth conversion, and now you can keep that money tax-free for the rest
forever.
Of your life.
Well, yeah.
And your wife's life.
Yep.
And then your children get to keep it tax-free and just have to withdraw a little bit a year. Unless they pass the Secure Act, then right. You've got a forced 10-year distribution. But he said, at his age, he's still got a long time that he and his wife will be able to keep that tax-free despite the Secure Act.
And the money's still in your control.
Yeah. All right, Gene?
Yeah. The only problem with that is that my AGI, because of my level of investments and everything, is pretty high.
Higher than your children, then?
Yeah, even though I'm not working, my AGI approaches 170.
Okay, but you're saying
so
your children are
not what they are at, so they're going to be in the same tax bracket I am, you know.
Well, that would still work, because remember, the Roth always works if the tax bracket is the same or higher. It's only if it's going to a lower tax bracket that you wouldn't want to consider the Roth conversion.
And that's a lower tax bracket in the future when you think they'll get it.
Yeah, well, yeah, and they'll be in the same tax bracket at least in the future.
Correct.
And that would be a good thing. So anyway, Gene, I think the strategy can work. But before you do it, make sure you're getting the best insurance policy. If you do that, make sure you're looking at all your options. And it are really important. Where are you going to get that money to pay those premiums? Those are the big things that I'd be thinking about before I would ever do it. And to be honest with you, all of our client planning in 40 years, I don't think we've ever done it unless there was an estate need for it.
An estate tax, yeah.
All right. And you know, also that's interesting, if Gene and his wife are willing to die early, it's a bonanza to the children, because if you only pay premiums for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, let's say, and then you die and leave behind all the death benefit, it's a great rate of return. But if they live to be 90, 95 years of age, then the internal rate of return of that that concept dramatically reduces down into something more respectable, 4, 5, maybe 6%, which isn't a bad rate of return.
No, it's why the insurance company can afford to pay it.
Yeah, they're, you know, they've got their things that they're doing there. Anyway, Fred in Cadenceville. Fred, how can we help you?
Hi, guys. Question for you. So I'm 40 years old. I've got 401k and an IRA that was a rollover from a past job and some brokerage type stuff. All my money is pretty much invested in index-based funds, almost all equities because I'm young.
Okay.
And I read an article that said, you know, there's a bubble in these index funds.
You're talking about Michael Burry, who was the Big Short, Michael Lewis. He's the one that made that proclamation about a week or two ago.
Okay, yep, that sounds about right. So I wondered, is there any truth to that? And if there is truth to it, is there anywhere to go instead and still and sort of mitigate that risk? Because one of the things I thought is, well, if there's a bubble in the index funds, where do you even go?
So it's an interesting question, and there's no absolute answer to it. But, you know, if you look at the indexes, the S&P 500, which is the most popular index in the world, the S&P 500 index, it is running at a higher valuation analysis than what you have seen historically. So historically, the typical average is going to be around 14 to 16 P.E. ratio, and we're in the 17 to 20 P.E. ratio range. There are people like the Case-Shiller, the Shiller index, where he values it based on a 10-year rolling P.E. ratio, and he says that the market is at the close to the second highest ever valuation on his index. And then you take the Warren Buffett index. The Warren Buffett index says that the market, you know, you'd want it to sell for less than 170 or 80% of GDP. And right now that's what the market is selling at, is at 180 some of GDP. So, you know, you use a lot of measures that people have used historically to say, is the index highly valued right now? And the answer is probably. It's on the high side. It's not ridiculously valued, but it's definitely on the high side. And there's an argument to be made that it's because of passive investors, people who just say, forget it. I'm not going to run out of the market and try to time the market. I'm just going to sit and hold. And now the question becomes, is if another 2008 starts to hit, will those people who are passive investors sitting there just sit there? And how long will they sit there? And how long will they wait until they all of a sudden start panicking and start selling? And how far will that take the market down? That's the concern that Michael Burry is talking about. Now, with all that said, can I tell you that that's where the future is going? I mean, there's plenty of things that could make that that put that concept off for another 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. There are people who say, no, the U.S. stock market always goes down every 5, 6, 7, 8. This is the longest running one. We're due for one right now. Nobody knows that for a fact. They say that's what's happened. Just because it happened in the past, I can give you a lot of good reasons why it happened in the past, and it may not happen in the future. I'm not answering your question, if you get the point. I'm trying to give you the basis as where he's coming from, and it is a concern. But, you know, what do you do? And I think the answer is what we do is we diversify. We diversify into emerging markets. We diversify into international. We diversify into small cap, mid cap. And so what you have to look at is what indexes are being affected by the passive investors the most, and those are the indexes that you have to not get rid of totally, but I would consider minimizing to some degree their position. Go ahead, Mike. You only got about 35 seconds.
Drew, as you said, look, the S&P 500 is the most popular one, so looking at that model, if this comes true, then in a major downturn, and if the ETF holders kind of picked up on it, what you'd expect to see is the S&P 500 to dip lower than other comparable stocks in the market industry. So that's another way of looking at it, is diversify away from the S&P 500 partially, if you're that concerned.
And just be diversified internationally and domestically. That's what we would say, Fred. And also looking at value stocks versus growth stocks. Value stocks have been out of favor in a big way. Growth stocks have been the ones that are driving the indexes to high valuations. I hope that's helpful to you. I wish I could answer your question more succinctly.
That was great. Thanks.
All right, buddy. You take care. All right, Mike, it's always great to have you.
I'll be back.
You're a great addition to the consulate. 10 years now, right?
Over.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Things are gonna be much better.